Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson. Lori spends her days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. She talks to students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. She's here to share their stories along with other insights with you. So let's talk learning disabilities.
Hey everybody, this is Lori and welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. So today we are going to get into dyslexia. It's been a while. I'm so excited. I have Leslie and Aaron from Dyslexify. Which I love that name, by the way. Okay. I think it's a great name. So Leslie and Aaron are both dyslexia therapists that work in the school district, and they are venturing out into the world of private practice, which I'm super excited about. They also happen to be really, really, really smart about dyslexia, and they're going to help us demystify some things and just get some better clarification on what is dyslexia, what should reading look like and at what stages, and then talk a little bit about what therapy should look like. So thank you girls for being here.
Thank you for having us.
So you guys can decide whoever wants to go first. Just give everybody a little bit of your background and sort of how you landed in the world of dyslexia and what you've done and what you're doing now.
Sure. So I have always been in special ed, whether I've worked with kids on the spectrum, you name it, I've done it. And I was working in a school and I had a great mentor. She's like, you should do dyslexia therapy. And I'm like, I'm not going back to school and doing dyslexia therapy. Well, P.S., there was an opportunity and I did. And it was the best opportunity for me. Best experience. I went through Scottish Rite with Karen of Reitz. I mean, you don't get better than that, really. Mm-hmm. And from there, I love teaching kids how to read. And having ADHD myself, I really understand how these, you know, kids learn and their brain works and the anxiety that comes along with it, the perfectionism that comes along with it. And I'm like, I'm going to empower you. I want you to be confident in what you do. And that's why I do what I do.
I love that. Yeah. What about you, Aaron?
As a parent with a child with dyslexia, it's been a long road and I've been there and I've done that with many parents. And I think the biggest thing is that, what do I do now? It's very hard to travel that path and not have the support, not have the ideas, not have the knowledge base to support your kid. So I went back to school. I want to be able to support my daughter, know what I needed to do, the laws of Texas, be able to give her what she needed and give her the foundation, which is going to support her throughout her entire life. So I went back to school. I became a reading specialist through SMU. Then I went in through the program with Scottish Rite and Take Flight and Plano. I went in while I was supporting my own daughter, because at that point she was not eligible yet. Mm-hmm. I went ahead and started with her. And then I was asked to come back into the district and support others. And I, I went back in. I wanted to be able to make the biggest impact, knowing that I have that kind of empathy for kids who do have learning differences. They need the support. It's about empathy. It's about understanding the child. Yeah. A program is a program, but when you're able to make therapeutic decisions to support that kid, that is what gives them that life goal. And my daughter is thriving. She's doing a phenomenal job. She has the confidence that has been built through many therapists. It is who is supporting your child. And that connection is huge. You want your child to feel confident, feel loved, feel, strong.
Supported.
And have a passion for education still. Lose that brightness that they have.
You know, to piggyback off of that, I just want to say, everyone talks about dyslexia programs, right? But I will tell you, the relationship you build with the student is just as important, if not more important, than the program itself. Because I have kids who they just don't believe in themselves. And they're like, I can't read. I'm never going to be. I'm like, yes, you can. And I'm going to show you how. And I treat them like my own children, right? Like I, like loving and firm and don't let them get away with anything. But I also give them a ton of empathy in my ear. And that's what they need. They need someone who understands them and doesn't just run them through a program, right? And with humor. Because we have to laugh at ourselves. And I don't think we do that enough, especially when you're in a school system. It's really hard with all the demands and the compliance pieces, which of course we have to do, but it really can take away from what we're really wanting to do. And that is that connection with kids so we can connect them to learning.
It's creating a space, a safe space for them. They need that.
Yeah.
They need someone that they can look up to and ask for advice. And it's more than just the you know, the program and that therapy. It's giving them what they need in their heart to feel comfortable to learn. That's a big step for them.
So why are dyslexic students not learning how to read in the general curriculum? Why do they need a special quote unquote program? What do you do differently than what they do in the classroom?
So first of all, it's explicit instruction, right? It's explicit. We are explaining it. It's structured. It's consistent. It's taught one part at a time and scaffolded. We're not saying, hey, here's a picture, here's some words, figure it out. And I think what's happening too is, you know, in the general classroom, they teach whole reading. And we, for some reason, they're not getting away from that, regardless of the program, right? And we, instead of looking at the child, say, where is the child at and how do we teach that child? I'll give you a perfect example. So, you know, in our program, you know, it's like you touch your name, the letters, right? They've been singing a song forever. You can sing a song and have no concept of what that song means, right?
100%.
It's lyrics, but what does it mean? So that's your alphabet. But if they're not taught that, hey, this is a symbol. This symbol has a name. It's the letter B. And B has a sound, B, right? Then we're doing them a disservice. They come to us and we do our missing letter deck, right? And they're like, I have no idea what comes next. I'm like, that's okay, because it's right there on the board. But that's a perfect reason. Kids are not being explicitly taught. Teachers don't know how. And the system is not providing that to teachers to say, this is how we provide explicit teaching. This is how you teach the letters and their corresponding sounds and how you put those together to read words. And empowering, because I remember teaching kindergarten, I knew right away that kid has dyslexia. That was 10 years ago.
Wouldn't it make sense, though, if we were just teaching everybody that way?
Yes.
Like, why? And why aren't we?
Because it's expensive to train.
Okay.
They're not preparing teachers in college to do that. We're not bringing structured literacy into the college programs. We are not, the general ed teachers have so much to do besides just reading, right? There's math, there's science and everything, but the foundation for all of that is reading. And it needs to be visual, auditory, kinesthetic, tactile, it's a touch it, see it, feel it, hear it. And there's not enough of that, you know, there's not enough of
exposure
to it, intensity. It's not systematic. I mean, every day we are doing the alphabet. We are touching, naming, and doing it. And also the other problem is everyone is on a computer. And maybe it ages me, but there is that motor planning, that brain connection by seeing it, reading it, writing it. I mean, kids are so excited when I get them a worksheet out, you know?
Isn't that crazy? We don't do them anymore.
We don't do them anymore. There's no textbooks. There's no nothing. I mean, we go on and we say, hey, here's our lesson today. Now get on your Google Chromebook and do it. Do you know how hard it is to use your executive functioning to go from Google Classroom to Google Classroom or to get all that technology? We just need to teach.
Yeah, no, I agree. Developmentally speaking, what are some of the misconceptions you hear from parents? Because I can tell you that I have parents that will call us and say, my child is going into kindergarten and I'm really concerned that they aren't reading or they don't know their alphabet, or they're going into first grade and they have terrible comprehension. And I'm thinking, I mean, are you even learning? I mean, you're still learning to read. Like, so can you help us understand a little bit about what's developmentally appropriate? And also, about the developmental differences in those lower grades between like a young kindergartner and an old kindergartner.
Yeah.
Because those are big.
Those are such, you know, it's really such hard questions to answer. And I'll tell you why. Because developmentally, kids develop at a different rate, right?
Right.
And now they're saying, hey, you can identify dyslexia at 5 years old, right? Well, I agree with that. I also say, hey, these kids take a lot of time to learn, right? We have to look at, you know, just because they can't write their letters does not mean they have dyslexia. Just because they don't know their letters does not mean they have dyslexia, right? We have to look at how is it being taught? When is it being taught? How old the child is? When did they start speaking? When did they enter school? Were they in daycare? What has their exposure to learning been? So do we need to be aware? Absolutely. So when we explain to parents, it's, you know, it's become a buzzword, really, okay? And It's like ADHD. Not every person has ADHD, or not every person has ADD, and not every person has dyslexia. We want to catch it early. And I bet you if we taught explicitly, we wouldn't even be having these questions, because then we can really more identify what is developmentally appropriate and what is with a lack of instruction.
Right, right.
Erin, do you want to add to that?
We're pushing through children at an early age and not giving them the time to mature, the time to grow, their time to, cognitively be able to even do these processes that we're asking them to do, like sit on a carpet for one, right? I've taught kindergarten for many years, and with the lower levels, they need to be able to have the opportunity to have fun while learning. It is a process. It's not about the product if the process is not there. And it teaches regulation. It teaches them to be able to justify and support and talking and collaborating and having the opportunity to have those conversations with the kids is how they learn. You can give them a piece of paper and say, okay, it's your turn to write, right? But if you're not explicitly doing it and you're not showing them and having the opportunity for visual, kinesthetic, tactile opportunities, they're not going to pick it up at the piece that we're asking them to do it. So when they get to upper elementary, middle school, and they're like, oh, well, my child's not doing this X, Y, and Z. Well, there are reasons for it. There are reasons for it, right? And we have to look at all the things. It's not just one anymore.
The preponderance of it all. Like, we look at evaluation.
I love that word.
Evident. The question of, what development is appropriate and how early can we identify, you're going to get different answers.
Yeah.
We can identify earlier, right? But it's so important to look at the reason behind why. If we have children moving, if they look at their absences, the dyslexia definition has changed, looking at environment, looking at other factors. So it's such a hard question to ask as parents want answers, and I don't blame them.
They do.
And regardless if you have it or not, you can still receive great instruction. That's why we say, whether you have dyslexia or not, this is going to structured literacy, giving you explicit hands-on learning, all the time, that is going to be great for anyone. And that's what we should be doing.
I agree. And I agree. That's a conversation we have often where it frustrates me as somebody who can assess a child and see that they have that need for that kind of instruction, yet they may not meet the textbook definition or the district's definition of dyslexia. So therefore, right, the district's probably not going to place them into the program. Mm-hmm. Yet I know that's what they need. So that's when having someone like you guys who can do it privately, and you don't really, it's not about qualifying for a service, you're just there to support and to help now.
We look at their deficits,
amazing.
Like what areas of deficit do they have? What are their strengths? And how can we support them, right? And
it's a foundational skill. What are they missing? It's a pyramid. You can't do one before you put the cart before the horse, right? What do they need in order to support? We can't work on comprehension until we decode. We can't work on, or even letters, right? It's building that framework for them to be successful. And if they're not successful in one, you can't go to the next, right? Because you're already ahead of yourself. So it's basically going back to the building blocks.
Can they manipulate sounds? Are they hearing the sounds, are they connecting, the letters to sounds? Are they able to blend? I've had kids who are sounding out, but then we keep going. Now they're finally, I'm like, did you notice you are not sounding out anything you're reading? And they're like, oh my God, no. I'm like, yes, look at you. It's like progress, not perfection, right? Progress, not perfection. You have made progress. High five,
I think the kids that I see that probably kind of frustrate me the most, and also it breaks my heart a little bit, are the kids that are in that fourth and fifth and sixth grade year, and that's when we're catching them. So, we're done theoretically teaching them to read in school. They're reading to learn, yet we've still got to go back and teach them how to read. And so how do you balance that for those kids that are, their curriculum is chugging along, yet they need to put the brakes on and go back? How do you manage that? And how do you keep them afloat in their grade while backing down the reading curriculum?
So that is exactly what we're running into now. So, we're both middle school. And so we get kids, we're like, how are we here? How do we get here? Because the system is passing on students to grades where there's not a lot of accountability anymore. It's like, if you have to do the work, if you don't do the work, you don't get the grade. If you need help, we'll help you. But if you keep getting away with not having to do it, then that's what you learn, right? So there's that accountability. The other thing is,
a grade does not justify a weakness.
Right.
And I'm seeing that everywhere.
Yeah.
A grade does not justify a weakness. I want to repeat myself because as a parent with a child with dyslexia, she could be making great grades, but it is so subjective, truly. God. And kids are missing skills. Mm-hmm. She's very auditory and she's also, kinesthetic and she likes certain ways of learning in different situations. And teaching them those, ideals, teaching them the philosophies behind that allows her to be confident in all of the subjects, right? But we're missing out on pieces of the puzzle. And these kids are coming to us and they're, their comprehension is very low, but they're not being given the skills.
Well, they're comprehension when they're actually reading it. But if you read to them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oral reading. And that throws out the star test too, right?
Yes.
Kids come, they're like so anxious. Like, listen, I just thought it does not matter. It's a grade about us. It's not a grade about you. And
exactly.
If you are reading, and I'm just very straightforward. I'm like, if you're reading on a second grade level, how are you going to answer questions on a sixth grade level? I'm like, really what it's saying is how well you read, not how well you comprehend. So can we get over it? And they're like, you know what? Yes, you're right. I'm like, come on, I'm going to prove it to you. But as far as going back to your question about how come we're not identifying them younger or hitting younger, it's because no one's saying anything. And then all of a sudden it's like, my child can't read, or someone like me speaks up and I call a parent. I say, I just want to let you know your child cannot read. And I'm going to ask them to be tested. And they're like, oh my God.
What?
And, and I will have to say, this has nothing to do really with the teachers. And this has really nothing to do with the therapist. This is, and I'm going to say this over and over again, a system that absolutely needs to be trashed and changed. I don't know a nice way to say it. And that's why people are leaving or people are very stressed out, because it's hard to be in a system that continues to fail others when all you want to do is
help.
And, it's not about my ideas or Aaron's ideas. This is all of us saying we have answers that we could institute. We just have to be willing to take the chance to do it because what we're doing right now is not working.
No, it is incredibly frustrating. And those are the kids that break my heart.
Yeah.
Because, the ability is there. They just need to be taught in a way that makes sense to them. And it is having to kind of slow things down, go back and do a little reteaching. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. Like I would never call myself a homeschool proponent, but in instances like that, I'm like, hey, why don't you take a year, do intensive dyslexia therapy at home? Mm-hmm. Because to me, at that point, what does science and social studies even matter if you're
exactly.
not reading?
I mean, that's such a great point because
it doesn't matter.
That's who's communicating with mm-hmm. us. Like so many of the homeschoolers are like, yes, we hate that you have to pay for this. If we won the lottery, someone wants to sponsor us, we can give our services. Like we would be thrilled to do that.
Absolutely.
Right? But it is a service, right? But we are getting so many parents are calling us and just like, hey, my child cannot read. The school is not providing the services, or I'm homeschooling because they're not learning anything. Can you also do science? I was like, we can do science and math. We can do science and history through the comprehension piece, right? Mm-hmm. We got to read because if we cannot read, how are we going to fill out an application for a job? How are we going to learn history and science? And kids are not going to like school. And more importantly, they're not going to feel good about themselves.
No, that's
and
the that's biggest piece.
An uptick in behaviors.
Yeah. What do you ever see a world that dyslexia therapy will be covered by insurance, medical insurance? That's crazy because I feel like medical insurance covers nothing. But do you ever see that down the road one day?
I think it's something that we need to push for. And I'll tell you why, because it is therapy. It's like speech therapy. Speech 100%. Therapy is covered, right? And that's explicit.
Occupational therapy.
And dyslexia therapy be covered. I would love to see parents pay less or pay nothing and do that. Parents shouldn't have to come out of pocket for it. Unfortunately, they do. It's like if you go to a private speech therapist and they can bill. Mm-hmm. I think there at least needs to be a code where I can provide the parents with a super bill and say, hey, and I've done this before years ago when you and I met. I was like, here, you could try to get this coded. Like, I can't do it for you. But absolutely. I mean, we're licensed therapists, with the state, something Texas does. We're certified with, we're certified as well. And it should be, we're not just teaching reading, like, hey, open a book, look at the pictures. I mean, we are rewiring the brain. And I know that sounds so like elitist or whatever, but like that is literally what we're doing. We are rewiring the brain to think differently through therapy. Isn't that what you go to? I go to therapy, right?
That's what you go for.
Into, right? You know, what are they doing? Rewiring my emotions or getting me to think and look at things in a different way, right?
Right.
And that's a process and I have to pay for that.
Yeah. I would love to see that. And I don't know how we advocate for that, but it's definitely something I feel like we need to start a movement. So my other question is about cursive writing. Is cursive writing still something you guys do through therapy? And can you talk a little bit about the importance of cursive writing? Because that's certainly not something we're doing in the classroom anymore.
I personally love cursive writing. I'm a lefty. So my handwriting is horrible anyway. Or it was. My dad made me do things over, you know, the hard love there. But cursive, yes. And what, you know, it's really hard because when the kids get older, they've already kind of had their handwriting, like what they want to do. So the kids have to be willing. But I love the handwriting. It's connection. It's movement. It stays together. You're not lifting your hand up and down off the page all the time. And it's that brain connection too, putting those letters together. You know, you have like loop left, you know, curve under, over, stop. That's that auditory with the paired with it. You do it.
I love that.
It. You know, curve under, over, stop, trace back around, close. So, you know, I mean, that's that explicit systematic teaching of those letters. Some kids don't want to do it. I'm like, and I'm not going to force a child, right? Especially when I'm like, hey, it behooves you. Like, it is your choice. But I want you to give it a go. And some are like, no. And some are like, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm like, not about me being right. I want you to do what's best for you, right? And you have to have your signature. So they took that away in elementary school. We need to go back to whether it's handwriting or not, it doesn't matter the program. We just need to teach it explicitly with the words, with the curves, with the stops, with the knots.
I don't think we're teaching handwriting anymore, are we? Forget cursive.
Handwriting. I think they brought it back like for second grade.
Yeah,
I don't know if
they did.
So then it's not practiced.
It's not practiced.
But then it doesn't carry.
There's no fidelity.
They don't use it.
Yeah. So kids don't know how to write and now they're trying to learn how to, think about motor planning, right? When you write, it's like reading it seven times, right? So like, why are we not just going back to what worked? Why are we always trying to change things?
We know.
But then we give Chromebooks, but we don't do keyboarding until eighth grade or ninth grade.
Make it make sense, right? Make the math.
I had keyboarding and when I was in elementary school, it was a class and it wasn't just keyboarding. It was literally executive functioning. How do I do this? How do I create a paragraph? It was a skills that help you in all the things, right? But unless I had those, I wouldn't have known how to do these things at a higher level that I was explicitly taught. But then why did we take that away? Because it worked, right?
It cost too much money.
I don't know if it's funny, but even like being, explicitly teaching, like you're going to say, we take this away and kids can't write. So, you know, we have, hey, you need to write a 3 to 5 paragraph. I have kids who can't write a sentence. We see kids all the time who don't know how to write a sentence. You know, we say it all the time. A sentence, a group of words, it begins with a capital, ends with punctuation, has a subject and a predicate expressing thought. A subject is a what? Noun. What's a noun? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, well, let's go over that. You know, what's a predicate? Well, let's go over that. And then we build these sentences so that we can build. I had, social studies, you brought up social studies. I don't mean to backtrack, but.
No, you're good.
There was an assignment for social studies and a couple of my kids came to me and they're like, hey, look at my note card. What do you think? I'm like, A, great handwriting. B, great notes. But do you have any idea what you're talking about? And they're like, no. I said, all right, let's have a seat. I said, I know nothing about history or social studies. I can remember if Texas was a state, like no joke. I'm so proud of it. I said, but I'm going to teach you this. I said, okay, so here's our note card. Import. What does that mean? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, so M is a Latin prefix that means into. I said, you're going to learn that in a little while with me. I said, export is X to send out. So M, and we wrote it out. We drew pictures. We drew an arrow, you know, M bringing in, export. And we had this whole discussion, a conversation, which enhanced comprehension.
Orally.
And then we did visual. Yep. They wrote it down, drew pictures. And then I said, okay, tell me what you learned. They were like, zipped it out. I have no idea what they got on their test. I don't really care. They understood and
they got it.
Burst and talk about it. That's explicit. And that's what should be happening in classes,
they
right?
They need backgrounds. They need background. We get kids come to us with all the different backgrounds, different abilities, different levels of understanding, different experiences.
Yeah.
And if they don't have the experience, there's nothing to connect with. There's not a purpose. There's not a purpose for them. They're just, you know, I'm ready for the next thing. Okay, my teacher's giving this to me. Okay, well, I'm going to put my name on paper. I'm going to fill it out and I'm going to keep going. But if there's not a why to why we're doing it, then there's not going to be a product and there's not going to be confidence in our children.
You know, who would have thought that all the advances in the technology that have been so amazing, right,
really
been such, it's really almost like creating the downfall of education.
You're 100% right. And it doesn't have to be. So
no.
Technology is great for so many things, right? But when we use it to enable instead of empower, then we are misusing it. And I remember having the Chromebooks in school, you know, just on a cart, but we need paper and pencil. And I think what happens, we're talking about like goals and accommodations.
Books.
We need to open it, feel it, teach how to annotate, how to highlight. Like that's why I taught them, guys, if you highlight everything, what's the purpose of highlighting? What's going to be your annotation? And I teach that as well. But having everything on the computer, A, for that executive functioning.
They don't have to think. It's not a clinician. They're not learning how to support themselves.
Right.
And if I don't know something, what do I do next? Mm-hmm. That's overwhelming. That is overwhelming to a kid.
I don't do it. I go get on TikTok.
Yeah, a paragraph. Oh, and a SAR test, when all they can think of is, oh my gosh, what's going to be the outcome? Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. I can't even start, you know?
Right.
And that's not fair to that kid, because it's not only not their fault, but they haven't been given the extensive support that they need to be able to do what they know that they can do deep down. They have what it takes.
Absolutely. And then we can spend a whole nother episode talking about how this impacts emotional and mental health.
Oh my God.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Firsthand, I see that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The anxiety and the depression and the...
And just it's the comorbidity too. It's like, you know, what came first, you know? And I myself deal with anxiety and ADHD, which I think makes me great at what I do because I can really empathize with them.
Same.
But I do really, and I make sure to tell kids, like, you are not what you have. You know, you are not dyslexic. You are not ADHD. Like, you have dyslexia. You have ADHD as part of you, but it does not define who you are. And who cares, right? Like, there are some great, like, adventures intelligence. Like, you're so creative, right? You always have strength. You can never be defined by the things that you can't do.
Do you ever come across parents? I got to ask you this because we do, and I know you have to. Do you ever come across parents that don't want their kids to know that they have dyslexia?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And how do you handle that?
I'm transparent. I say, you know what? You're empowering your child to let them know this is what you have. And I'll tell you why. Because I didn't know I had ADHD until I was 18. And I always thought there was something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. I cry talking about this, you know? Always in trouble. I don't know why I couldn't understand this. Why can't you just relax? If I could, I would. Who wants to be wound up all the time? And my mom read a book, Driven to Distraction, by Dr. Hallowell. I'm sure you know that well. And then she had me read it. And I can't tell you, and I share the story with the parents. I mean, I can't tell you what a relief it was to know there was nothing and that this was something that I could get help for, whether it was medication, whether it was therapy. I do yoga. I teach yoga, right? Because that helps me. My movement,
right?
Like movement helps me, right? And I tell parents, it is imperative that you tell children what they have because they have an answer and they're such relief. At first, they're like, some kids are upset. I'm like, be prepared. Your child may be upset. But then tell them what a gift it is to know that, like, this is what you have and we can do something about it.
Now we know what to do.
Now we know what to do. It may not be
the more you keep it a secret, the more you keep it from them, the more
it
makes it so negative.
Right. I mean, it implies there's something wrong when really, no. Now we have answers and there's support out there, whether it's at public school, private, whatever that child needs. It gives you it opens so many doors. I get very emotional about it because it's just very, very true.
I like to use analogy with my kids, my big kids at school. You know, they might take allergy medicine. They might need a boot because they have an issue with their foot, right? It's not a band-aid. It's supporting the underlying condition and supporting them to do more because they can and they know how. They're given the support to know how to support themselves. And if we don't empower them at a young age to know that, hey, you know, I can do this, right? You can overcome those, you know, discrepancies by with support that they're given and the aptitude to do better because they know how to do better, right? And I really feel that in a situation such as public school or, you know, even private school or even a homeschool, right? If you're not giving them the ability to be confident in what they know at an early age, it is going to not just backfire, but you're going to be able to, yeah, it's going to snowball and they're not going to have the means to want to help themselves.
You know, it's like yoga, right? So we met through school. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I was like, come to yoga. Come on. So she came. So we use locks. I think this gives you access. It's like an extension of your limbs or brings the floor up to you. Why wouldn't you use it? So when you use it, I'm like, cause then it's like, well, if I can't do without, then I'm not good enough. Right.
Right.
Then it's like,
but they're not using it.
It's a combination. I tell when they come to the yogi students come, I'm like, hey guys, use your blocks. So I give the whole spiel, right? Like the blocks, like use them. It helps you open up your chest. It helps it's your foundation. So, because everyone's different, everybody's body is different, anatomy, and so is everyone's brain.
Well, and I think I always try to explain to parents that by going to see a dyslexia therapist, by going to see an ADHD coach, your goal is to work yourself out of a job.
Yes.
You're providing that support.
Cool. Yep.
You're wearing that boot to strengthen the muscle so you can eventually walk without it. Same. And so this is not a forever thing.
No, like I love.
Thank you.
Goodbye. And same with advocacy.
When you don't need it anymore.
You don't need it. And like even with our special ed advocacy, right? My goal is really not to go to ARDS with you. My goal is to provide you with the skills and guidance you need to advocate for your child yourself in a realistic way, right? That's not enabling, but to teach you the ropes, understand the Texas Dyslexia Handbook, understand federal laws. And how that impacts your child and what a goal should look like. And so I love doing that. Like making those evaluations make sense for parents. They go, oh, that's what that means? Yes. Yes. This is what this means. And this is how it impacts your student. This is the goal we need. And this is how a goal needs to be written. Oh, we can have a whole discussion on that. And then, you know, it's just about empowering and informing and,
it's doing the right
thing. Doing what's right.
Doing what's right for our kids and doing what's right for our parents.
Yeah.
Giving them the opportunity to be successful starting from the beginning, not until eighth, ninth grade when they're, you know, traveling through the system, you know, and just kind of going throughout, you know, life. But then they get to that point and then they don't have the skills to be on their own, to be independent because they go, well, what's wrong with me still? I have kids that are in, you know, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade right now. They're just being diagnosed.
Yeah.
And they truly, the competence level is so low and it's not their fault.
Gosh, breaks
my
heart.
They've been pushed through and they need the support. A child came in and became eligible not too long ago. And this child is so bright. And they came to me and we worked a little bit yesterday even. And this child goes, I get it. You know, I get it now.
That's why I do what I do.
Like cheering and dancing.
And the light bulb goes off and you go, wow, it took, you know, that many years for that child to be given that opportunity, you know, and goes all the way back to, you know, basically in elementary school again. How do we get those, you know, an overall holistic approach to structured literacy so that way these kids are not getting through the pipeline all the way to middle school, you know, or even an adult and go, All of this had to go back to dyslexia. I had dyslexia and I never knew it. I wish I knew how to help myself.
This is going on all over. This is not a specific district. This is just all over in Texas.
This is everywhere.
Across the states, you know.
Oh, 100% across the country.
Yeah, it's across the country, you know.
So you guys are going to be, you're leaving the school district here in a couple weeks, right?
One.
Nobody's counting. You're starting your own practice where you're going to be doing private therapy. You're going to be doing it in person, but you're also going to offer some virtual, which is really exciting for my people that are not in the North Texas, North Dallas area. Right. Tell me how, if I have somebody that wants to come and speak to you about getting some therapy for their child, best way to find you?
Well, two spaces. So Facebook, right? So I actually started a Facebook group, I think 10 years ago. It's Texas Dyslexia Support and Resources.
It's amazing.
Anyone can be on there, right? We want people like we don't want it to be too advertising, but we want parents to have resources and advocates and therapists, a safe space to say, I need help, or where do I go? So that's one avenue. Of course, contact us directly, you know, dyslexify.com, you know.
We'll include that in our show notes, yes, so they can absolutely have access to it.
And, you know, they just have to look for us, you know. I mean, we just got up and running, you know, a couple of months ago, but really it's word of mouth. Find us on Facebook, reach out to you. And we are not someone you come to. And if you decide to go somewhere else, we don't burn bridges. So like, we'll have a conversation with you always, tell you what we think, see how we can assist you. And you can come with us, or you cannot, you can call us in a year or come back. It is a flow. We build relationships, and we want to help those who we can. And that sometimes means turning people away too, because
absolutely,
kids have to be invested. Parents have to be invested.
It has to be the right
fit. It has to be the right fit. It has to be for everyone. Like I said at the beginning, relationships over anything. And
I love
luckily
that
we've done great, but you know, you have some people, it's like, you're not everyone's cup of tea, and it's okay.
No.
You know,
and that is okay. And you're not the right fit for everybody. Your services may not be exactly what that child needs at that time, but it's very respectful to be able to say that to somebody and not just, yeah. So that, I love that. And I'm very,
cause we have a huge community of therapists who are fantastic. Say, hey, you know, I think you do great with this person. Please, but we encourage you to go talk to others and make an informed decision to come to us. I mean,
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. True. Well, thank you guys for taking time out of your last week of school to talk with me today. I could talk about dyslexia all day long, because I am, it's something that I've always been, I just feel like those kids are so underserved and overlooked. And I don't know that, I feel like the laws have tried to shift and change and tried it, but I feel like it's either too little or too much or too late, or I don't know. One day we'll get it right.
It's a little convoluted. So like
that
not
too
interpreted in the same way that it should be. And here's the thing, districts knew this was coming. And it's just unfortunate. I think everyone's doing the best they can with what they have. And I mean, we are so close to the people we work with and who we know. And I mean, we love the kids. We want to help, and we are doing everything we can, whether we're in the public school or not, to make it work.
To make a difference. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for being here. I really appreciate it. If listeners, if you have any questions, or I'm going to put their website information and their contact info in our show notes. You're always welcome to reach out to me at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. Share this with anyone that you know that's dealing with their student has dyslexia, an adult with dyslexia, just anybody who's living in that space. I'm sure that they would appreciate having this information as well. So I hope everyone has a great day. Thank you girls for being here. We'll see you next time on Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Thanks.
Have a great day.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.